This morning, as I promised, we have Dr. Mark Griffiths on the line, and he is a chartered psychologist, and he's going to be discussing with us the effects of gambling in video games. Good morning, Dr. Griffiths. Are you with us?
Yes. Hi there, Liam.
How are you? You well?
Yeah, I am.
Fantastic. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be on.
Brilliant. So, can you tell us a little bit about who you are, maybe just a little bit about your own background and what you do?
Yeah, so for the last 32 years, mm-hmm. I've been researching what I call technological addictions. So that includes everything from slot machines and video games through to the internet and smartphones and everything else you can think of. Most of that work's been done at Nottingham Trent University, where I've been for nearly 25 years now.
Okay.
I've probably published more papers on gambling and gaming addiction than anybody else in the world. It's obviously something I'm very passionate about. But the mm-hmm. good news for listeners out there is that, particularly when it comes to video gaming, is the number of people who are genuinely addicted to video games in the same way that people are addicted to things like alcohol and other more traditional drugs is actually very low. However, okay. having said that, and I'm sure there are a lot of parents out there listening who have got screenagers who are constantly on their social media and playing video games, is that, you know, even though, you know, children, adolescents may not be addicted, there are certainly signs there that the activities can be problematic in their life, taking away from things like doing the homework or engaging in physical activity. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as a responsible parent, you need, and I've got three screenagers myself.
I like the term screenagers. I've never heard it
for
before.
Over 2 decades now, and I think now it's kind of it's coming to the fore now, Liam. So, mm-hmm. you know, all I'm trying to say is that, you know, parents, if they want to be responsible, have got to try and moderate their children's use of social media and video games, and also, you know, parents have to educate themselves about the video games their children play. You know, and I do think parents sometimes, they, you know, when they see an age rating on a particular game, they don't take it as seriously as they do when it's on a video. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if a video game has got an 18 age rating on the game, it means that this game should only be played by adults in the same way that, you know, if you've got an 18 on a DVD, that it should only be watched by people who are 18 and over. I think parents have to use those warnings, and of course most video games now also come with what are called PEGI ratings. This is the Pan-European Game Information Service, who tell parents what's in the game. Does the game contain swearing? Does it contain violence? Does it contain gambling? Does it contain sex? You know, and I think parents, you know, there is so much information out there that parents can look at now. And obviously one of the newest things that's come to the fore over the last couple of years is what we call loot boxes. This idea that when you're playing a video game, in-game you can actually buy various types of virtual items. And, you know, there's lots of different games out there. You know, people can buy things like, you know, these kind of virtual FIFA game cards. You know, you can open up crates and treasure chests within games that give you a chance to win things. But, of course, these things have to be paid for. You know, I think a lot of people get very annoyed when they've paid money to a game and then have to find the actual have to pay and buy these loot boxes to progress in the game. So Star Wars is a game that when Star Wars Battlefront came out, people who had paid something like £60 for the game then found that to actually progress in the game, you know, you basically had to buy loot boxes, you know, to get things to progress in the game. And obviously players are very angry about that. And of course, a lot of the time that you buy these loot boxes, I mean, the game manufacturers say that you always get something for your money, but I would argue that the vast majority of times when you open a loot box or you open a treasure chest, you actually get something that is financially of less value than what you paid for it in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to agree. I mean, for a lay person like myself, I have two young boys who are under the age of 9, and they're kind of getting into gaming now, and I've kind of regulated as much as I can. It's like, you know, once or twice a week they're allowed to play. But that being said, we do spend a lot of money on latest games and stuff, and then I find they get really frustrated because they can't get to a level unless they pay for something, and which is ridiculous. You know, you've already paid, as you said, a huge amount.
Yeah, and I think as a parent, I know this, is you want to do things for your kids and you want to try, you know, if you can afford it, to get them the things that they want.
Mm.
But of course, this is, I think every industry tries to monetize their products. And of course, now we've got a lot of what we call freemium type games, which are kind of initially free to play.
Yeah.
But as I say, when, you know, to progress in the game or to get on in the game, you have to actually then pay to do something. And to me, that that's, you know, a little bit unethical to do that. I think it's even worse to say when you pay a lot of money to buy a game and then find you have to pay things on top of that as well. And I think the kind of real outcry started with Star Wars Battlefront, because, you know, that would have been a premium game to buy in the first place. You know, most games are maybe about £40. Star Wars Battlefront was even more expensive. Mm-hmm. And as I say, players were then being asked to pay even more to get on with the game. And again, even my daughter who plays games, you know, she would ask me if she can buy, you know, the things you can buy, virtual items in terms of kind of accessorizing the characters you play, so getting them different costumes, etc. And again, the kind of things when you do that, they often only last for a year, then you have to buy them all again. So again, to me, that seems a little bit unethical to do, is because effectively there you're kind of paying for a license just for a year, and then you have to restart from scratch again.
Rent a jacket for your avatar. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, it's like the game Fortnite. I'm sure you're aware of it.
Oh, very aware.
A lot of my younger kids, a few of their friends in school, they started playing it, and they said to me, "Can we do it?" And I says, "Well, it's for 12, so I don't really agree with you playing it." But look, like, I let them, you know, play it for about, I think they lasted about 20 minutes, and then I went, right, that's a no for our family. You're not going to be allowed to play that. And I looked at it, you know, and it's a, you know, as another child had said to me, but it's a friendly killing game. And that just shocked me, you know what I mean? That it's a friendly killing game. I know there's no
Your children, their friends, they're right in the sense that there isn't the kind of blood and gore that you would find from other, you know, kind of games that, you know, things like Grand Theft Auto or Call of Duty, which are very, very graphic. I mean, this is a kind of battle royale type game where, you know, and my youngest son plays Fortnite, and he plays along with three friends. That, you know, there are four of them playing in these 20-minute games. And the thing, of course, is once you start one of those 20-minute games, you can't just go away, because that leaves your friends in the lurch, and they'll lose in that particular scenario. And I have to say to my son, when I'm making dinner, I have to say, you know, I call up to my son and say, right, dinner's in 10 minutes, which is a cue to say to him, don't start playing another game of Fortnite.
I use cues a lot with my boys as well. Yeah, it's like, look, you've got a heads up.
This is another thing where I'm saying is that parents need to know about the children, you know, the games their children are playing. You know, gaming, I've written lots and lots of papers and carried out research on the very positive effects of gaming. Mm. And of course, the very negative effects usually come from very excessive use. And things like Fortnite, they have what I call a Moorishness quality. As soon as you've played one game, you want to play another game straight away.
Yeah.
And of course, that can lead into people playing for hours and hours. And that's where responsible parenting comes in, and having time limits. And again, I get emails from parents almost every week saying, you know, my child, they have temper tantrums when I take the game off them. And I think as a psychologist, you know, my kids are lucky they've got two psychologists as parents.
Absolutely.
And of course, what we do is that we'll say to our kids, you know, you've now got half an hour left on this, you've now got 15 minutes left, you've now got 5 minutes left, you've now got a minute left.
I use the
and
same
that kind
tactic.
Of stops the
yeah,
kind
I,
of temper
I use the
tantrums.
Same tactic. Yeah, absolutely. I use the exact same tactic on my boys, and it seems to help an awful lot if you give them, you know, cues. Here it comes. I still get a small tantrum, but nowhere near as big as the one that I would get if it was straight away just taken from them, you know, because it's instant gratification with kids, you know.
Any kind of gaming, and I think
that's the danger, you know. But this is a new danger for me, that it's being called gambling, and that, you know, I mean, I can totally relate to why and the reasonings behind it, you know, if there's something like tangible to buy, to open a box that gets you to a next level. But would you call it necessarily gambling, or is that the appropriate word?
No, I mean, some of them aren't gambling, okay? I mean, some of these you're buying to buy a product. I think when you're buying, let's say you buy five loot boxes, and, you know, you get five loot boxes to open, and there's a chance, you know, each one of them, there's a chance to win something. To me, when you end up, you know, getting something that is far less than the price you've actually paid to buy the loot boxes to begin with, that to me is basically a lottery in terms of, you know, what you might get, or a kind of raffle. So again, that to me, that would be gambling. But of course, the other thing is that we've now got what we call third-party skin sites, is that where you've actually won things in game, you can buy or sell them on other websites, and that then has a financial value to what you're doing within the game. And then that, again, whether you call it gambling, I mean, mean, in my own papers I've written, I call them gambling-like. But I do think in some cases, you know, there are games, for instance, Treasure Hunter, for instance, is a game where they used to, for instance, have a Wheel of Fortune, and then players could actually buy, you know, they used to get free spins in the game every day, but you could then buy more free spins on that Wheel of Fortune.
I think I recall something similar, yeah.
And then again, they introduced loot boxes where there were, you know, you were basically... buying a chance to win something in the game. To me, those were definitely gambling, you know, because people were, you know, you could actually end up with absolutely nothing when you played some of these mini games within those particular games. So I think for the vast majority, I would say these aren't gambling by definition, but they are gambling-like. But there are some loot boxes out there which I think are genuine gambling, and there are countries around the world, including Belgium, that have decided that these are. Fall under their gambling regulations. But it all depends on each country how they define gambling in the first place. And whether you call it gambling or not, I still think that we need, you know, kind of rules and regulations around loot boxes. And again, it's usually parents that are paying for these particular things, so they need to know, you know, what the kinds of ins and outs of all you know, what loot boxes are and what they can give. And that parents can make a choice whether they think this is good value for money in the first place.
Absolutely, absolutely. But you know yourself, being a parent, and for any parents out there, it's almost an alien world to a lot of us, you know, this gaming thing. You know, as I said, my young kids do it, a lot of friends, teenagers do it, and they'd go, oh, mommy or daddy, can I buy this? I mean, with busy lifestyles that parents have these days, it's quite hard to stay in the loop and find out.
Oh, absolutely!
What's going
on. I work hard, and I, you know, you cannot, you know, whether it's your children's smartphones or their gaming activities, any time of, you know, time in front of the screen, you cannot monitor your kids 24/7, 365 days of the year. Obviously, there are now things on social media and for things like gambling where you can put blocks in place. But I think the video gaming industry are still way behind those other industries in actually giving parents the tools that they can actually help, you know, limit their children's play. Playing. And of course, once you've bought something for your kids, you know, if you do it through, you know, an Apple iStore or whatever, you know, Google Play, is that often once you've set up that account, is that kids can, you know, constantly keep doing it because the password is already there pre-stored. And I think that's, you know, there have been cases where parents have found that, you know, that their children have spent, you know, £1,000, a couple of £1,000 because, you know, they've just constantly been pressing something that the parents set up in the first place, but the parents didn't realise is that kids on their own can keep pressing these things. You know, my children are very responsible, and they'll come to me and say, Dad, can I buy this particular particular thing? And on the whole, I will say yes. And, you know, they don't do it. You know, all my kids now, that, you know, they're reaching that kind of emergent adulthood stage anyway, and they're responsible players. But that's something I've instilled from them, you know,
absolutely,
playing games from a very young age. And also, that, you know, I myself, you talk there about what I would call the technological generation gap between parents and their kids. I was actually, you know, when I was 14, I remember spending hours a day playing Donkey Kong on my father's Commodore 64. So I know what it, you know, I know the kind of pull of these games, but I also realise that playing excessively doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you're going to have negative effects in your life. And I think I'm a good example of that, is that I was quite an excessive player when I was an adolescent myself. And I look at in my children, you know, they're, you know, what do I do? You know, what did I do when I was their age? You know, and I used to watch, you know, 3 or 4 hours of black and white television every day with my parents.
Yeah.
But, you know, my kids don't watch television particularly. They would rather be on social media, or they watch a Netflix film, or they, you know, they're doing something gaming. You know, and there are lots and lots of very, you know, I don't want parents listening to this thinking that, you know, gaming is bad, because most of the evidence is that moderate gaming has lots and lots of really good effects. The only bad things are when you come from very excessive playing, when it can have a negative impact in terms of your relationships, in terms of your schoolwork, and in terms of your kind of physical education, because obviously video gaming can be a very sedentary activity. But of course, there are lots of games out there that are very active. You know, when the Wii games first came out, I used to love playing with my kids, and, you know, I'd be sweating buckets after I'd finished, you know, really was quite active. And you've got those kind of dancing video games as well. So, you know, when people say to me, are video games good or bad, my stock answer is, well, which particular games are you talking about?
Yeah.
And when we're talking about, you know, it's more to do with the amount that you play rather than the gaming itself.
Well, I can understand. I mean, in relation to, like, when TV came out, at first in our generation, or definitely in mine, it was the goggle boxes. It was like, don't sit in front of the TV too long. Your eyes will go square. Stuff like that. So yeah. It's a similar scenario, only it's a little more frightening, I think, for parents now, because we have our children interacting on the internet with other children, or therefore other people, full stop. The fact that there's possibly a danger of our kids gambling, and there's also the danger of addiction, it does set up a lot of warning signs. But as you said, I think everything in moderation is always
it comes down to common sense, Liam. You know, I say I always have to wear my, you know, as a responsible parent, you know, I have to, you know, so things like, you know, playing of violent video games, you know, I actually think the most a literature on that is inconclusive. I don't necessarily think, based on the scientific evidence, that playing lots and lots of violent video games makes children more violent and aggressive. But do I allow my own children to play violent and aggressive video games? No. You know, just because science hasn't conclusively proved it, you know, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't be responsible parents and say to ourselves, what do we think our children should be doing on these games?
Well, this is it. It's like, as I said before on our show here, there's a watershed on TV for a reason, and there's no watershed on gaming unless the parent says so, you know, and this is the issue.
And again, it also comes down to, you know, parents know their children the best. I'd be lying if I said to myself, you know, has my daughter, who's now 19, did I know she was watching an 18 film when she was 17? The answer is yes. I mean, to me, she was a fully mature woman, you know, even at the age of 17. And, you know, it's not that I'm there saying that you should ignore these warnings, but you know your children, you know, parents know their children the best and know what that they feel they can play and can't play. But for me, there is no, and again, I look at my son here. I mean, when he was 12, he told me that everybody in his class had got Call of Duty, which was an 18 game. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I refute, you know, there is no excuse for parents allowing a 12-year-old to play a game that's aimed at 18-year-olds. For me, that's just, you know, simply, you know, shouldn't be done. And, you know, my son, thankfully, he prefers things like FIFA and Minecraft to games that are not, you know, aimed at people who are 18 or over. Mm-hmm. And he also knows, because of my job, you know, if the media found out that I, you know, allowed my children to play violent and aggressive video games or played games that were age inappropriate, then obviously I would be come down like a ton of bricks. But, you know, I know for a fact, just based on what my youngest son tells me, there's lots of parents out there do buy games that are age inappropriate for their, and it's usually boys, for their sons.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I hear all the time, as I said, my kids are under the age of 9, and some of their friends are playing Call of Duty already, and they're playing Fortnite and stuff, and their parents are just, whatever, if it keeps the child quiet, that's the way forward. But that, in my book, would be bad parenting. So I think what you're trying to say, and I think, you know, it's the best approach, is to be a better parent and just keep an eye on your kids and make it your decision instead of your child's decision.
It is about responsible parenting, and it's also about you getting involved and seeing you know, when you buy a game for your children, you need to find out what is in that game. And as I say, on the side of any box now, you'll have what are they called, these PEGI ratings, and they'll tell you instantly what is in the game, and you can then make a decision about whether you want to, you know, buy that game for your children.
These PEGI ratings,
there are games that say that are, you know, for 3-year-olds, for 7-year-olds, for 15-year-olds, for 18-year-olds, you know, those guidelines are there. And, you know, we have guidelines on films and we have guidelines on games, and that is why they're there, to help people make an informed choice about when they buy a particular game for their child.
Okay, and these PEGI ratings, that's new to me. That's a new thing that's come in on the side of games?
No, the PEGI ratings have actually been around since 1993.
Oh.
And in fact, I was one of the people that, you know, instigated getting those on games. But of course, they've become more and more, you know, now I think there are 8 different types of, you know, telling you what's in the game. As I say, when I said to you earlier, there's, you know, whether there's swearing in the game, whether there's sex references in the game, whether there's violence in the game, they are on, you know, they are on every game that you play. You know, I'm sure it's the same in Ireland, and I'm pretty sure it is actually in Ireland as well as they are in the UK, is that those PEGI ratings are there, as I say, to help parents make responsible choices and make an informed choice about what their children are playing.
Thank you so much for coming on to the show, Dr. Griffiths. Is there anything else you can add? Maybe just to, you know, is there anywhere online that parents can go to just get some more information on and just to help them parent their children when it comes to the dangers of parenting?
If you type in Peggy Ratings into Google, you'll come up with the Pan-European Gaming Information homepage, which, you know, gives, you know, parents lots of advice on, you know, taking responsibility for their children to play those games.
Brilliant. Okay, well, we really appreciate you coming onto the phone, onto the show and telling us about the effects, the issues and the worries with gambling and video games and the effect on children. Thank you so much, Dr.
Okay,
Mark Griffiths.
Thanks for having Thank me you. On.
No
okay.
problem at all.
Bye.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye. And there we go. That was Dr. Mark Griffiths, and he's a chartered psychologist and distinguished professor at behavioral addictions, namely gambling disorders, gaming addiction, internet addiction, and work addiction, sex addiction, and so on, in Nottingham Trent University in Nottingham in England. And thanking him so much for coming on.